Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I'm your host for The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share advice for techies, for earth lovers, and for penny pinchers. As much as I love the sound of my own voice, this broadcast is going to rely heavily on guests who are subject matter experts on everything, ranging from how to get your small business up and running, interviews with some of the brains behind your favorite apps, and even how to remove garbage from outer space. You never know who's going to pop up and join me next in studio, so make sure to subscribe to The Town Hall on iTunes to get our episodes downloaded directly. And if your boss is making you work through lunch or your commute is just too short and you miss something awesome, don't worry, we've got your back. You can check out our blog for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today is so exciting because I am joined via Skype by Marcy Zaroff. Marcy's resume is as long as a CVS receipt, and I'll let her go into all of that, but she's a sustainability influencer, a green business leader, environmental pioneer, author, a style inspiration of mine personally, and a lot more. So Marcy, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's definitely a first to be compared to a CVS receipt. So,
I mean, it is long and thorough, and we have a lot to get into today, ranging from, you know, fashion and film and fish-free fish. And so before we dive into all of the exciting stuff you have going on, let's start at the beginning. Tell me a little bit about you. Let's talk about your background and really what sparked your passion for sustainability.
Sure. So I actually was given a book when I was 16 years old called Living in the Light. And it just struck a very deep chord in me and taught me that there's much more than what we actually see. And I was inspired at the same time by the brand Aveda, which was still in somewhat of a startup mode. You know, young company, but when I got my hands on it, the same person who actually gave me the book introduced me to Aveda. I was blown away because I was the little kid, you know, with the lemonade stand and business cards when I was 11. So I was definitely a wired entrepreneur. And so once I discovered Aveda, it became clear to me that business is a force for good. And as an entrepreneur, I only wanted to go into the world of good business or sustainable business. So having said that, I got a business degree, and the first business I started out of my apartment in 1990 was a health and environmental educational center to take people on this journey of health, wellness, and sustainability. And we had a holistic health coach certification program that today has now grown to be the largest program in the world. Over 75,000 people have been certified as health coaches. The school is known as the Institute for Integrative Nutrition and is in 135 countries around the world. So I then opened the first Aveda concept salon in the school with the founder of Aveda, who became my mentor for over 25 years and a dear friend, and actually wrote the foreword to my upcoming book. And then in 1995, I discovered that there was a missing link in the whole wellness equation. And I was a fashion consumer. I got best dressed in high school, of course, big fashion background there. And I loved fashion. And when I got into the trenches and started to learn about the human and environmental impacts of the fashion industry, I was blown away. So I coined the term eco-fashion in 1995, filed a trademark. Everybody thought I was crazy. Nobody would ever buy into this crazy concept of mine, you know, was a lot of naysayers. But in my eyes, it was never an if, it was a when. Because I said, look, I'm the fashionista and the tree hugger. You know, I'm the person who likes to hang out with the tribe, but also can be in the boardroom. And, you know, it's about bridging those worlds. Ecology and fashion do not have to be two dichotomous worlds. They actually can coexist. You can make stylish clothing that is also socially and environmentally responsible. So when I discovered that, I rolled my sleeves up, founded a brand called Under the Canopy in 1995, and this became the first sustainable fashion and home brand. And that just sort of segued into many efforts through the years, which I'm sure we'll cover as we continue. But today, I am the CEO and founder of a company called MetaWear. It is the first sustainable fashion manufacturing platform, kind of like the Intel inside of sustainable manufacturing. And we have a factory in the U.S. It's a 40,000 square foot factory that does screen printing and garment dyeing and cutting and sewing of mostly knitwear, like t-shirts. And then it also, we have a whole platform overseas. So that's my main thing outside of my food work. So I'll just end with saying I do live even today at the intersection of food and fashion. And I think that's what makes my own personal platform a bit unique is, you know, all of my work in the fashion industry was inspired by my work in the food industry, which continues to this day.
I love what you said about how you can be, you know, the tree hugger and the fashionista at the same time, because I think for a lot of people, when you think about eco fashion, and we'll get into, you know, as, you know, the eco fashion pioneer and the one that coined and trademarked the term, you know, what exactly does eco fashion mean? But I think for a lot of people, it means Birkenstocks and burlap sacks. I know that it certainly meant that for me. So what does eco fashion mean?
Yeah. So, you know, it was interesting because when I first coined the term and, you know, we talk about, you know, fusing those worlds, there's a lot of prejudice that if you're a fashion forward consumer, business, designer, that you couldn't possibly be into the environment, because if you're one of these tree huggers, then you don't understand fashion, right? So there's a lot of like stigma and prejudice. And then there was also a big prejudice in those years when I started that if you were an environmentalist or humanitarian or you were a conscious, you know, business person, then you wouldn't support fashion because fashion was materialistic and superficial and very wasteful and destructive. And there's no way that you could truly embrace your own values. And so for me, again, being that I lived in both of those worlds, I would go from, you know, the natural products industry trade shows where people would say, I've got your back. And I would go to the fashion trade shows where people would say, watch your back. And so for me, coining the term and marrying those worlds was about demonstrating that you don't have to give up style, quality, fit, color, or comfort to have, you know, ethically made, sustainable, you know, product, that those worlds can absolutely coexist. And so it's been, you know, it's been quite a journey. And I do see now that we're at a tipping point for the movement. There are entire conferences now dedicated to sustainable fashion and eco fashion. And I just pinch myself every day because it's, you know, if you're not a part of that solution, you're part of the problem. And the fashion industry is the second largest polluter in the world next to coal.
Did you know that these, you know, organic and sustainable materials were going to work? I mean, that had to have been, I mean, maybe not in 2018, but back then that had to have been quite a risk. So what was that process from, you know, the initial idea to implementation when you were really trying to like carve out a sustainable lens for fashion? Like, what did that process look like?
So in the early years, you know, that whole kind of stigma of like crunchy, frumpy, boxy, beige, and boring, you know, there's the reason it existed was because the only materials that were really available that you could consider, you know, environmentally friendly were hemp. And hemp has a very, very hard, rough hand. And while it's an amazing fiber on so many levels and UVA and UVB protector and, you know, and just the fact that, you know, it doesn't need any kind of water or chemicals to grow. I mean, it's really a very strong and durable fiber. But unfortunately in fashion, you know, unless you blended it with silk or tencel or something or cotton, something much softer, or you softened it using heavy chemicals, you were going to have something that did fit that burlap sack, you know, stigma. So, you know, my whole thing was if I won't wear it, it's not going in my line. So I would literally sit with designers that we had it under the canopy, and I would look at, you know, making products in kind of non-sustainable at first, just to get great design. And then I would go to factories and I would go to cotton farmers and try to convince them, hey, we can make this if you do X, Y, Z. And, it, you know, and look, I got a lot of people that turned me down, but for those who bought into the vision, you know, I think those are the leaders of the movement today in terms of supply chain. And so it's just about collaboration. I think I've built my whole career on, you know, inspiration, education, innovation, and collaboration, which has been paramount to my efforts. And so the process really was, you know, at first we were a mail order catalog and we had to tell the stories of, you know, what is organic cotton? What is recycled poly? What is, you know, tencel or eucalyptus as we've dubbed it? and help people understand why it matters. But first and foremost, lead with great design. That you have to give people what they want, what they love and seek. And then it's, oh, by the way, it's also organic, sustainably made, ethically produced, you know, recycled materials or organic materials. You know, it's about adding value to product. And I think more and more companies today have embraced that mindset. And again, going to where I am today with Metaware, one of the reasons I started Metaware was to make sustainable fashion easy for brands and retailers, many of whom would get very overwhelmed by how do we navigate these sustainable supply chains. I don't know the right questions to ask. I don't know the right certifications to look for. I don't know how to make sure I'm doing this right and connecting the dots of the very complex supply chain that exists in fashion and textile production. So Metaware is a solution provider that has become a turnkey plug-and-play manufacturer for brands and retailers so that they can hand us a tech pack instead of some crazy Chinese factory that maybe is, you know, using, you know, exploiting labor and using really, you know, toxic materials and processes. So it's been a, you know, I say Lao Tzu said, right, journey of 1,000 miles. It's definitely been 1,000 miles.
let's talk more about Metaware, because the brand really is so unique. And I think that if you really look into it, you'll see that there are a lot of little different elements that create something, you know, obviously very special and innovative on the whole. So walk me through, you know, Metaware's brand story a little bit. I mean, the a la carte model, Seaweed printing, cradle to cradle certification. Break it all down for me.
So this goes back to how I've modeled a lot of my career after the food industry. So, you know, you go into restaurants today and you have these buildable options. You know, you point to each menu and you pick what you want off each menu and you get a customized dish at the end. So in learning that all kinds of brands, retailers, and companies across different distribution channels have very, very unique needs, we built a model at Metaware that has basically four menus. So menu number one, what story do you want to tell? Is it certified organic? Is it made in the US? Is it cradle to cradle? Is it fair trade? Is it, you know, all recycled? And is it some combination of these things?
For people who don't know, what is a cradle to cradle certification?
So cradle to cradle, which Bill McDonough, if you haven't seen the book Cradle to Cradle, it's a great read, talks about what we take from the earth, we have to give back to the earth. It's built on the circular economy, you know, and the circular model, where in the making of products, you're thinking about the long-term effects of where those products may wind up. So all the materials are carefully measured. In the way of fashion, there's kind of five pillars: material health, material reuse, water stewardship, renewable energy, and social justice. And we are assessed as a manufacturer and with the materials that we're using and all the processes and the specific ones where they've, you know, every box is checked with cradle to cradle, we can use the cradle to cradle certification on those specific products. And it's just a great model because it is really addressing and especially addressing the waste issue in fashion. 5% of our landfills today are textile waste, which is a very serious issue. So
yeah.
Kind of going back to the model. So once our clients, you know, address what are the stories they want to tell, and many of them want to tell multiple pronged stories, which is fine because we'll help them build collections around that. And then menu two is what products are you looking to make? So is it underwear? Is it women's athleisure wear? Is it baby or children's wear? Is it home, you know, textiles? Is it loungewear, robes and you know, lay around the house, you know, kind of clothing, you know, what do you want? And then we actually will work with you with all of our materials library. We have about 15 proprietary materials. We have about 150 base styles we've developed. And we'll work with our clients to help customize what we call our elevated essentials. We'll also do custom work, of course. And so if somebody sends us their tech pack, we can create, you know, fabrics and or styles based on what their specific desire and needs are. So that's kind of menu two. We'll work on product and fabric. And then menu three becomes the manufacturing model, which is the core of Metaware, which is we're going to ask you what kind of volumes you're looking to produce, what kind of margins you're shooting for, and what are your price target goals for retail. And that's where we'll plug you into either our bronze, silver, gold, or platinum model. And bronze is, we make the whole production at ethical, sustainably, you know, vetted, and a supply chain or supply chains that I have worked with for decades, many of which, that are in India. So we actually will manage the entire production through all, with all the certifications. We'll do all the logistics and we'll deliver it to your door at your your warehouse domestically. The platinum business model is 100% of the product is grown and sown in the U.S. So that includes, you know, U.S. organic cotton, spinning in South Carolina, knitting in North Carolina, cutting and sewing in Pennsylvania or Virginia, and dyeing and printing. And we actually have a program with Dr. Mercola called the Dirt Shirt, which you can buy on Mercola.com, which is a complete GOTS certified farm to finished fashion, you know, made in the U.S. And GOTS is the Global Organic Textile Standard, is the platinum standard for a certified organic textile, and looks at not just the fiber and the fact that it's certified organic, you know, to the NOP, but every single process has been certified GOTS, and there's no harmful chemicals from farm to finished product at all, including the dyes and the printing.
I love that. I love the Dirt Shirt.
Yeah. The other two, the silver and the gold, are hybrids of the bronze and the platinum. So part of the production is overseas and part of the production is domestic.
I think that, you know, your extensive career in fashion obviously has lent itself to all of these different brands. But switching gears a bit, you were executive producer on a documentary called Thread. And, you know, it explored all of the different environmental impacts that are a direct result of the clothes that we wear. And I think that a lot of people don't necessarily know what we're wearing and what it's doing to the planet and kind of the correlation between the two. So is there, I mean, a statistic or anything that kind of sticks out in your mind? You know, we talked a little bit about the percentage of textiles in the landfill, but anything that can really drive the point home for everybody listening about how important the connection is between the clothes on our bodies and the world that we live in.
Yeah. So 10% of the world's carbon footprint is coming from, you know, carbon impact is coming from the textile industry. And when you pull the curtain back and you also see, you know, 20% of the world's freshwater pollution comes from textile treatment and dyeing. 3 trillion gallons of water are used a year in textile production, over 1 trillion kilowatt hours of energy. There's just the list is endless. And I think people are really just learning about this. And there's been a movement also on the social justice side to wake people up to, you know, a lot of the garments that we're wearing and buying here in the U.S. are being made in places and in countries where garment workers are making, you know, $36 a month and cannot even put food on the table. And I think one of the most eye-opening catalysts for consumers has been the Rana Plaza tragedy that happened in Bangladesh in 2013, where 1,133 workers lost their lives in one moment. And that created an uproar all over the world. There's now over 100 countries that have created local divisions of what's called Fashion Revolution. So the Fashion Revolution, which is fashionrevolution.org, is definitely a place to go learn a lot more, get information, join the movement. I'm on the board of Fashion Revolution USA, and on April 24th, which is the anniversary of Fashion Revolution, every year we do events all week long all over the country to educate and activate consumers around the fact of asking the question, who made my clothes? And then just to add, you asked me about my documentary. One of the reasons that I created the documentary and co-created it, so we started with a full documentary called Thread, and then that segued into 4 short films with Amber Valletta, who was a supermodel, who was my co-producer. And we really wanted to, through the lens of positive design and innovation, show people that there are choices out there today. A lot of people just don't know where to get them and what they are and why it matters. And so on my website, marcyzaroff.com, I have one of the 4 short films posted, and I'll be adding the rest of them on my new website that's coming out in a few weeks. So, but it's important information. And, you know, again, you know, cotton, which is, you know, one of the most used fibers in the world, uses about 3% of the world's agriculture, but uses about 25% of the most harmful insecticides, up to 25%, and can be up to 10% of the most carcinogenic pesticides. So it's not just what we eat and what we put in our bodies that matters. It's also what we wear and put on our bodies that matters.
And I think it's mattering more in 2018, obviously. Like, and I liked what you said about, you know, that we have choices. We just need to know that they're out there. And there are certainly, you know, more brands now. But what trends do you see evolving, you know, in the next few years in the eco-fashion, you know, sustainable lifestyle space? What are some things that you think that, I mean, you are the expert. Like, there's no one else that I could ask that could probably give me as good of an answer. So what things do you see really coming down the pipe for the consumer in terms of, you know, eco goods in the next couple of years?
Yeah, so I think the three elements that most consumers are looking for are authenticity, accessibility, and affordability. And to that, a lot of what has held back the movement has been just lack of those resources or that knowledge out there. But the industry has now really started to come together, and we're seeing a lot of collaborative work around circular economy and eliminating waste. There are even, believe it or not, major fast fashion retailers that have committed to being zero waste by 2050, which means they're collecting old textiles and turning them into new textiles. And that there's a lot of that happening right now in the world of kind of zero waste innovation and cradle to cradle innovation. In addition to that, you know, I happen to be a soil junkie. And as you heard earlier, you know, I started my career with food, particularly organic food. I happen to be on the board of directors of the Organic Trade Association, which has 9,500 members in this country, all committed to growing the organic industry. And we started an organic fiber council. I'm very passionate about organic fiber and organic cotton. But in addition to that, there's also a movement towards regenerative agriculture. And there are kind of two camps that have been born. One is that you have to be organic first. And then if you layer on some additional methodologies onto the farming method, you can actually help rebuild the soil in a way that it becomes one of our greatest solutions to climate change. That if you have healthy soil, that is, that the ecosystems and the biodiversity are vibrant, you can actually turn the soil into a sponge that will suck carbon out of the atmosphere. So that, you know, even though technically organic agriculture is part of that solution, there are a few tweaks that could be made to kind of put it in that camp of being organic and regenerative. What I've done is I've looked at, because there's another camp of people that are looking at regenerative agriculture as strictly as let's collect carbon from the atmosphere. And they're not looking at eliminating GMOs and pesticides and the things that in organic agriculture, of course, you don't have. So I've created a farm project called RESET, which is an acronym for Regenerate Ecology, Society, and Economy Through Textiles. And so what I'm seeing in the textile industry around cotton is most major brands and retailers are trying to figure out sustainable cotton strategies. And so organic sometimes, even though they, you know, many of these companies are integrating organic cotton into their programs are just too big to be able to, you know, scale at the level they need to scale solely on organic. So I've looked at RESET as an opportunity to help farmers make the transition into organic through our model, in which we just finished piloting in India. Our farmers are eliminating GMOs and all the chemicals, but that three-year transition is one of the hardest parts for a farmer to go into organic. And so now our first 3 years are fully regenerative, where we're measuring the carbon in the soil, and then we're layering on to that all the organic methodologies, so that in that once that three year hits, all the farms will be certified organic as well.
I love that. I live in Agrohood outside of Atlanta, and we're doing, you know, a lot of soil experiments and stuff. So that's, I guess I'm probably, I don't think I'm a soil junkie. I'm probably getting there. I've never heard anyone call themselves a soil junkie before, but what you're doing is great. And I think it's You know, with projects all over the board, I mean, you really do have a hand in every cookie jar and sustainability. Let's talk about Good Catch. You know, another brand under, you know, your umbrella, and Good Catch is fish-free seafood. So how on earth do you come up with something like that? That is incredible and a little insane.
So my husband and I started a consulting agency called Beyond Brands, where we took my background in food, beauty, and fashion, his background in beverages, supplements, nutraceuticals, and cannabis therapeutics. And we came together in a conscious agency with where we layered in and curated all of our, a lot of our friends who are seasoned experts and entrepreneurs. And we serve in each of those verticals different clients. We were approached, or we met with an amazing private equity fund that specifically invests in plant-based proteins. Their mission is really to you know, save the animals. And they recognize that, you know, that fish is the number one animal protein consumed out there. And that, you know, there was nobody out there addressing a plant-based option for seafood lovers, right? So you've got, you know, got meat, you've got poultry, and you've got, you know, all the kinds of milks out there. So they really couldn't find something that they felt was, had the ability to scale, that had the right elements to it. So they, we partnered with this private equity fund and brought on, there were five co-founders. So the person running the fund, and then my husband and I, and we brought on the two top plant-based chefs that we know of, just absolute rock stars, vegan, but super creative leaders in that world. And they helped, and we helped build the business, and Chris created the money or brought in the money. And together it was an alchemy where we have now uncovered a brand called Good Catch, as you mentioned, that is going to be absolutely groundbreaking. It launches in December on Thrive Market and at Fresh Direct to start. And then we'll go nationwide in January 2019 into all kinds of major retailers. So we're starting with tuna fish, and it's made of six beans and an algae oil. So you get all the omegas and the protein that you would get in regular tuna fish, but there's no GMOs, there's no gluten, there's no harming animals, there's no mercury. And in my world of fashion, there's no microfibers, which is a place where, again, my worlds collide in a big way.
Let's talk about your book. You know, it's about to come out, The Eco Renaissance, co-creating a stylish, sexy, and sustainable world. So what is the Eco Renaissance?
So, you know, most of what I've been talking about is, you know, food has to be delicious and fashion has to be stylish and beauty products have to be, you know, they have to be functional and you have to have the right scent. So in essence, the eco-renaissance is modeled after the original renaissance when we were coming out of the dark ages. And through creativity and collaboration and connection and community and consciousness, there was a shift in popular culture and a rebirth. And that's where we are today. We're coming out of this kind of modern day dark ages. And there are these paradigm shifts happening using those same five pillars across art, food, wellness, fashion, beauty, and business. And so the book, The Eco Renaissance, is the movement that connects all of those lifestyle sectors through that common DNA of the creativity that we can change the world through the lens of great design and redesign, right? And then consciousness, community, connection, and collaboration. These are the fundamental pillars of the Eco Renaissance. And so the book is very resourceful. It provides a lot of guidance and tips and, you know, and ideas and things to think about. And there's an Eco Renaissance manifesto. And I connect in each of the chapters illuminatists of this movement, people who are paving the way and who are leaders of the movement and doing really cool things. So, you know, these are the people to follow and learn about, you know, not some of the people out there that are getting followed that are kind of not really being driven by purpose or, you know, or being a part of this, you know, this shift in humanity, this rebirth.
You said that in your new book, you know, you had a lot of tips and tricks. And I saw that, you know, the book is laid out in order for people to live and shop in harmony with nature. So let's say someone is listening to this and, you know, they want to live more sustainably. They're not doing too much right now, and they kind of want to build the building blocks and start their own eco renaissance. What are a couple tips or tricks that you can think of for beginners to just get started, to do something different, and to kind of try to help the planet?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the way I wrote the book was really, you know, to plant the seed across the different sectors. So to make it easy. So if you're talking about food, you know, reading labels and trying to avoid, you know, GMOs, trying to avoid any of the heavy chemicals. One of the, you know, things I've been saying for 25 years is if you can't pronounce it, you probably shouldn't be eating it. Right. And so organic, obviously, I'm a big advocate of organic products. And 83% of American consumers today are buying organic, at least occasionally. So it's certainly now widespread and crossed to the mainstream and available. So look for it and support that movement in the food world. In fashion, I would say, you know, clothes swapping is a very inexpensive way to be sustainable. There are also great websites where you can rent clothing, like Rent the Runway, where after you're done wearing it, you can send it back and get something new. So you can sort of move away from the fast fashion model, which is quicker, you know, cheaper, more, and tons of pollution goes with that, right? So move into a rental model. Obviously, there are, you know, fair trade certified and GOTS organic certified designs that are out there today. You can go to Shop Ethica or Motivanti or Revinvert. There's a lot of these curated websites that have a lot of, you know, these kinds of sustainable fashion products available. In beauty products, I mean, today you mentioned CVS at the beginning of the call. You know, you can buy eco-friendly beauty products that are lining the shelves of CVS and Walgreens and, you know, the mass market retailers. I mean, Costco is the biggest buyer of organic food in this country. And I would say that, you know, these mass merchants are really, you know, paving the way, and they're the ones who are carrying, you know, huge assortments today of better quality products. And of course, now with Amazon buying Whole Foods, you know, there's no lack of accessibility anymore. So now it's not why would you buy organic, you know, renewable, recycled materials, foods, eco-friendly beauty products. It's why wouldn't you? Why would you want to put these products in and on your body when they're an extension of you?
So let's talk about products for just a couple minutes. You know, the word influencer comes up a lot when we talk about you. So what are some of your favorite products? Like, what are some things, what are your daily must-haves that you use that maybe you either talk about in the book or, you know, that you can kind of give us a sneak peek and let us, you know, behind the Iron Curtain and seeing kind of what the woman who coined eco fashion and has a hand in everything in sustainable living, what do you use?
Yeah. And there's a lot more of this obviously in my book, but I, you know, I start my day and always with Aveda or Dr. Hauschka, Eminence. I have a couple of different, you know, favorite skincare products, but they're all eco-friendly and organic. I love EO. I like Dr. Bronner's. And then from a clothing standpoint, again, I am a big fan of organic cotton clothing. I try to avoid regular cotton clothing always when I can. All of my dress up wear is Rent the Runway. I have a monthly account with them. And in terms of foods, everything from if I need a quick, you know, run out the door in the morning, I start with a Garden of Life protein bar. I happen to be vegan and plant-based, so to me, I can't imagine life not being that way because it's all about no compromise for me. You know, I want great taste, but I also, you know, I feel the difference. I want to, in fashion, I want to look good, but I also want to feel good and do good in the world. So if I apply that mindset into every choice that I make, you know, some of my favorite brands, you know, that are known brands out there are really from Amy's Organic to Annie's Organic. I love Late July chips and Muir Glen salsa. I am like a chips and salsa freak. You know, I cook a lot of whole grains and beans. And when I go out, I always look for organic and I always have green juices or smoothies, again, with lots of yummy organic ingredients and vegan protein powders. So, you know, there's kind of an endless list here of brands, companies that I'm passionate about, but I'm a big buyer at thrivemarket.com. you know, it's online, organic, fair trade, gluten-free, everything that you would potentially want in food and beauty. And now they're just starting. I have another brand I just started called Farm to Home, and we're making organic robes and baby onesies that are also available on thrivemarket.com. So it's about connecting the dots, again, between all these different sectors, from food to fiber to beauty, and business, of course, being built on these principles of the five P's: people, planet, profit, passion, and purpose.
And you can read a lot more about all of those things, I'm sure, in the book. And before I let you get back to saving the planet, I do want to play a little game with you. We call it rapid fire. I'm going to ask you 10 questions and just blurt out whatever answer comes to mind at first, okay?
Sure.
Okay, number one, what does your morning routine look like?
I go to the spa across the street and I get a coffee, a green smoothie, and a steam and a jacuzzi, plug in, swim some laps, and by 7:30 in the morning, I feel completely invigorated to start my day.
That's a fantastic way to start your day. If any actor, dead or alive, would play you in the movie of your life, who would you cast as yourself and why?
Ooh. That's a good question. Oh, goodness. I've got some people in my head, but I'm like playing it out, right? Like, yeah. You know, maybe, I don't know, can we come back around on that one? I got to think about it because there's a lot of different layers of, you know, to me, it's, you know, everything is about, is coming from a soul level, you know, which is kind of at the essence of eco-renaissance, that we're turning on the light from within. So authenticity is everything to me. So when I think about somebody, there's different, you know, a lot of different people that have different facets of me, but I think at the soul level, that would, I would want somebody who walks the talk and lives the lifestyle that I live so that they could be fully authentic in that role.
What is your go-to karaoke song?
I would say either Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, or Crosby, Stills, Nash, Sweet Judy, Blue Eyes, or Beatles song.
Classics, the classics. How do you take your coffee?
Black, dark, dark roast.
Who's the last person that you texted?
My husband. We have a long distance marriage that we're just complete soulmates. And so we're only together a few, 3 days a week, maybe. So we have a daily promise that the first thing that we do is text each other when we wake up. And the last thing we do is text each other before we go to sleep. And then we text each other throughout the day, just, you know, so our we're sharing our energy. So, yeah.
You're stuck on a deserted island and a helicopter can drop down one food for you, the same food. What could you eat every single day? Chips and salsa?
That's definitely up there. I mean, you know, I think, you know, there's these kind of go-tos for me. For protein, I'm huge on lentils. I love like a pasta with greens. So I'll mix like kale and broccoli into like a gluten-free. There's so many cool, innovative pastas out there now that are gluten-free pastas that have beans in them and pastas. So that's probably like the most complete that would really fill me up. And then of course, top it off, I would need some pineapple because I'm a huge, like, sweet. My sweet tooth is in the form of fruit, not candy.
Mine too. Where's your favorite place to vacation?
So I would say probably either Costa Rica, where I've been 8 times, Bali, where I've only been twice, but it's absolutely amazing if it just wasn't so far. And then, you know, being in the big cities, like I'm a city girl too. So I live in New York City, but I love going to London and Paris as well.
What was your least favorite subject in school?
Probably, I hate to say it, but probably history. Because I don't like to live in the past. I'm a forward thinker. And so I feel like a lot of that was sort of, you know, a lot of history to me, what I wasn't passionate about it as much because the kinds of things we were learning didn't seem as relevant to me as if I was learning about, you know, like ancient civilizations, that things that I could choose about history that I am more passionate about because there's a lot more to learn that isn't taught in school than what is taught in school in terms of wars and who won what and when. You know, there's just a lot about history that would just rub me wrong. I hate to say it, but yeah, I'm always about, you know, how do we think? We can't change history, right? Eleanor Roosevelt's favorite quote, you know, and we have to live in the now and make the now the tomorrow.
Last but not least, what does success mean to you?
So success is really the fusion of aligning our personal and our professional values in a way that they're in complete resonance so that it allows you to flow effortlessly. And so when you're living a fulfilling life and you're making choices that are true to your values, then you can unblock all the negative energy that sometimes holds us back from manifesting our potential.
That couldn't have said it better myself. That was beautiful. Marcy, so before I let you go, where can everybody find out more about you, more about the brands, about the book? Let's do a little shameless plugging before we go back to our afternoons.
Absolutely. Thank you. So on Instagram, I'm at Marcy Zaroff, which is MarciZaroff. And you can find at Marcy Zaroff the handles for my other companies, Eco Renaissance, Beyond Brands, Good Catch, and Metaware Organic, and Farm to Home Organic. My website, MarcyZaroff.com. I have a new website that should be up by August 11th. And that will also have access and links to all my other companies and brands. It will also be, there'll be a link to buying my book, Eco Renaissance, but you can go on to Amazon.com and you can buy Eco Renaissance now. It's available for pre-order and just pull up Eco Renaissance, Marcy Zaroff, and the book is shipping on August 14th.
Awesome. Marcy, thank you so, so much for hopping on here. This was inspiring. It was innovative. And as someone who loves, you know, food, fashion, and doing the right thing, that this was just a very, very cool experience for me. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk to you. And I'll get back to you on that celebrity.
Deal.